Bulletproof Radio, a state of high performance.
You're listening to Bulletproof Radio with Dave Asprey. Today's cool fact of the day is that some extinct hominids didn't just stab their prey from a close distance. You might be saying, what the heck? But check this out. Archaeologists at University College London recently had a sporting event of prehistoric proportions to figure out how cavemen could actually hurl Stone Age spears at prey with any power, accuracy, and distance. Because if you've ever tried to throw a spear, it's actually kind of hard. So these athletes were six javelin throwers, and they were probably as strong as the average Neanderthal. The weapons were two replicas of 300,000-year-old wooden spears, which were one of nine ancient hunting tools they found in Germany in a coal mine. And a lot of researchers think that these Neanderthals snuck up on and stabbed the prey with pointed sticks, basically. And, well, that would be kind of cool, except maybe that's not true. The data from high-speed video cameras at the throwing event showed a crucial piece of evidence for long-range hunting. It turns out that there was no loss in a spear's speed or physical momentum between its release from the athlete's hand and when he hit the target. In other words, they built their spears right, even though they were these cavemen that we like to think of as dumb, just because they have overhanging foreheads and things like that. Well, what does that mean for you? It means that if you, like me, have some genes from the Neanderthals, you may have the gene that gives you less back hair than average. Yes, that comes from cavemen, and yes, I have that gene. So if you ever see my shirt off, I have less back hair, and maybe I can throw a spear.
Quick question for you. What makes you feel more invigorated, less stressed, and more in control of your body? The answer, more energy. Specifically, more quantum energy, because our bodies are quantum systems. Leela Quantum Tech has figured out a way to harness quantum energy so you can reach a state of vibrancy that you've probably never felt. Dozens of studies show that Leela Q's products neutralize the effects of harmful EMFs around us and even release positive energy that can improve your blood flow, optimize your heart rate, and other benefits. Leela Q has some heavy science backing it up. A recent study looked at people who use Leela Q for just 10 minutes. The study used a special blood illumination technique called dark field microscopy, and it showed significant protective and improvement effects on blood flow. So take a quantum leap into higher vibration at LeelaQ.com/Dave and claim your exclusive 10% discount.
Hey there, ice bath lovers. Do you want to take your cold exposure game up a notch with some contrast therapy? Well, you should, because cold plunges and contrast therapy can lower stress, up your immunity, and even help you sleep better. It works better than just cold therapy alone. Well, now you can do that with the new Michael Phelps Chili Goat Cold Tubs by Master Spas. Whether you want to relax in a hot soak or get energized with a cold plunge, the Michael Phelps Chili Goat Cold Tub has you covered. You can easily hop out of the hot water, get in the cold water, and go back and forth. When you do that, you get better results in less time, and that's what biohacking is all about. Go to chiligoattubs.com, use promo code DAVE500, and you can save $500 on any Chili Goat Cold Tub. I have one in my backyard. That's chiligoattubs.com, promo code DAVE500.
In today's episode, I have two athletes on, two twins, brothers, and I'm talking about none other than Bob Bryan and Mike Bryan, twins who are some of the best known tennis players on the planet. Guys, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks, Dave.
Now, you guys have I counted, won 117 tour titles, which is unprecedented, but is that number accurate?
118.
118,
but no one's counting. And Mike's got a few extra.
You have a career super slam, 16 Grand Slam titles, more than any men's team. I'm just going to go straight for the money question with you guys. What the heck makes you so good at this? I mean, you are performing at this incredible level. And if granted, I'm asking both of you, but is there one thing you would credit this to?
Well, it helps being twins. We've been playing together for almost 41 years. And most teams join together for just a couple. So, you know, we've been on tour here for 20 years, played over 1,000 matches together. And it helps that he has a 140-mile-an-hour serve, lefty serve. I got a decent return. We think alike, so we can kind of read each other's minds. So we move together and cover each other on court. And we really love what we do. We're having a blast. We're 41. We're still going strong. We're playing against guys almost half our age and figuring out ways to beat them. So we're having a good time.
So you guys are in your 40s, like early 40s. That's really interesting. There's been all kinds of literature, and you know, because we've chatted over dinner, you know that I do all sorts of strange neurofeedback and things like that. There are unusual things written in various books about how there's intuition and connections between siblings and mothers and children, and especially between twins. Mm-hmm. Do you think that some of the reason that you guys are so successful is that you're connected cognitively in some way that's hard to explain?
Yeah, I think we can get an energy going on the court that just feels like it's going in one direction. I think it can be intimidating for opponents to feel like we are kind of a two-headed monster coming at them. You know, we're extremely loyal to each other. We have our blowout fights. We've had, you know, many slumps where it does get frustrating. But just having the confidence that we're not going to, you know, go down the street to the next partner it's comforting, and it actually makes us stronger, knowing that we can have our tough moments and the other guy's not gonna bail. So we're building all this experience, all these situations that we've been through together is only helping us for the next match. But
yeah, and we practice together every day. We've played together for so many years. I believe it's more the reps, playing with someone, being by their side on and off the court for so long that you kind of lock wavelengths, and you start thinking like we always finish each other's sentences. When we watch back our matches, it's eerie how we're bouncing at exactly the same time.
Wow.
And then it's crazy to see. It's like we're just one energy out there. But we're also extremely different, which, you know, we're identical twins. He's more right-brained, I'm more left-brained. He's more creative. Like, he can paint and draw, and I have no artistic ability. I'm super anal with my time, and I'm super organized, and he's just easygoing. He's got three kids, brings them on the road. You know, he'll practice and then just head off to the park, where I'm, you know, trying to biohack and get in the, you know, hyperbaric chambers, and he's more loosey-goosey, you know, which...
So your personalities are very different, but you have the same genetics. Interesting.
Yeah, it is the right brain, left brain. You know, I'm left-handed, he's right-handed. But we complement each other well. Like he said, he's very anal, and he's into the biohacking. He's been into it for 15, 20 years. When was the first year you went gluten-free?
Well, yeah, I had more injuries when we turned pro. You know, I had, like, bouts of arthritis. You know, I was... my stomach was struggling. I was getting sick a ton, and he was totally healthy, had no problems whatsoever. So then that's when I went gluten-free, started adjusting my diet, started, you know, taking care of my body more, and just went down this whole rabbit hole of health.
Well, you do look healthier between the two of you, if I could just say.
No, but like you said, he was, you know, in the early 20s, and he was dealing with injuries. And I was laughing. I was kind of laughing at him. I was just like, hey, man, I'm indestructible here.
Like, are you some kind of a wuss kind of a thing?
Yeah, I thought he was a wuss. But he was having some really bad luck. And, you know, he started clearing up his diet and doing some stuff differently. And he started feeling great. And then, you know, we went doubles. And
you guys are the best guinea pigs ever. Like, have you both done your viome tests? Like, do you have different gut bacteria? Have you done the genetic, like, full workup to see?
Done all that stuff. I'm trying to bring Bob along. He catches up like a few years later, but I've done the viome. I've done the genetic testing. I think it all relates back to when we were born. I was a little bit undercooked. I stayed in the hospital for an extra week where he went home. I was in an incubator. I had jaundice. So I think I struggled a little bit from the early stages, and then I was a little bit more prone to, you know, sickness.
There you go. That could easily explain a huge amount of that, right? Because your gut bacteria changes in that. And there's even a birth trauma thing that happens. Right? If you're in the hospital for a week, I came out with a cord around my neck, and there's long-term studies around autoimmunity in that, Right. So, okay, maybe that's what it was. You got a different bacterial start and you guys went in different directions. The right and left-hand thing is mystifying to me, but I want to like look at your data next to each other. But I mean, there aren't very many twins who have something called the Brian Golden Slam named after them. You're like, oh, we took the French Open, Wimbledon, the Australian Open, the US Open, oh, and a gold medal in the Olympic. Like, that's crazy. So I like to theorize that you guys must have some sort of magic connection there. The right and left brain thing is also, I think, pretty unusual for identical twins. At least I'm not an expert in that, but from what I've read.
You see a lot of identical twins that are left and right-handed, damaged twins. Right. Yeah. So I think that's where that comes from.
All right. And then I also heard in there the 10,000 hours. So you've been playing together longer than most people who've played doubles. Have either of you in your career spent enough time playing with another partner to really like get to know them at least a year or something?
Yeah, well, last year, Bob actually went down with a hip injury, which is the first injury amongst us that kept us off tour. You know, we played 20 years straight. We were having a great year last year on a roll, the number one team in the world. And in Madrid, in the finals, he just felt a sharp pain in his hip. It was like a sniper got him from the top of the stadium, and he couldn't put any weight on his hip. We had to put him in a wheelchair, and we were hoping, okay, this is going to be a two-week thing. But it ended up being about 8 months. He needed a full-on hip resurfacing, which we were hoping that he wouldn't need. He tried the stem cells. He tried every other therapy, but it was just too far gone. It was basically bone on bone.
Yeah. Yeah, I tried to rehab for 3 months, and then I went to a doctor to get scoped. And the guy looked at me and just said, this is unscopable. And he says, what do you want to do? And I would love to come back and, you know, retire on my own terms. And he said, okay, you're going to need to get a hip replacement. So I got a guy that he does a modern version of it. It's called resurfacing, but it's still a metal ball and a cap. And but I was back 5 months later.
Yeah.
So you're a cyborg now.
Yeah.
Do they have special cyborg rules?
there's another cyborg, Andy Murray, just had the same thing done. He's pretty big news over here in London during the tournament. He won Wimbledon singles twice. And so he's 10 years younger. So he's going to try to come back and play singles with this surgery, which should be interesting. We'll see if he can do it.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. Bob was the first guy to come back with a metal piece in his body. And the first player to win a match and then first player to win a tournament. And we're having a great year. Now we're one of the favorites for Wimbledon, which he's done an extremely hard rehab schedule and got back to 100%, where he's actually moving better than he was before, which is really cool. He keeps telling me that I'm going to have this done. I'm stretching every day. I'm rolling. I'm doing everything I can. But genetically, we're pretty similar.
It is interesting if you're the one with the autoimmune issues or you know whatever the earlier injury thing, but your hips are doing all right. Have you done imaging? Are your hips still in good shape? Because maybe some of the things you're doing work, or are you also like getting ready to, you know, like okay, you're 40, you've been playing, you know, professional tennis for 20 years, it's kind of hard on the body.
Yeah.
Like do you feel like you guys are kind of in alignment, or are you actually pulling out ahead? Did you grow your resilience because you didn't eat all that gluten or whatever?
Well, at 25, I went to the hospital. I was feeling a lot of pain in my hips. I had arthritis. They did an x-ray, and they're like, okay, you're bone on bone at 25. And they're like, we're going to have to shave down both your hips. And it was a career-ending injury back then because the technology for the surgery wasn't around. And so a lot of guys were going down with that. But then I just totally shifted everything. Started just fixing my microbiome, foods, everything. I just total went into biohacking mode. And I think I've just really extended the lives of my joints somehow. How long they can hold, I'm not sure. But I do have more space in my joints now than I used to, which is pretty amazing to see on like an x-ray that I've regrown some cartilage.
You're the only guy in history to regrow cartilage.
Yeah, Bob's skeptical, but I do feel better now at 41 than I did at 25.
If it helps, this anti-aging nonprofit group that I run in the Bay Area, or that I ran, we had a lady come in. She weighed about 400 pounds. I would translate that to stone because you're at Wimbledon, but I don't know how to do that. And she was on a walker and she came in and she's, I'm going to inject ozone in her knees, her cartilage. And she shows her x-rays, bone on bone. And she does 3 prolozone treatments. She comes back about 6 weeks later to the next meeting without the walker.
She says,
hey, everybody, look. And she shows us her x-rays and you could see the cartilage that regrew.
Really? That's strange.
It was crazy. So we definitely have cases where it can regrow. And I've seen stem cells do crazy stuff. But if it's gone, if it's bone on bone, or if there's slow growing infectious stuff that doctors oftentimes don't realize might be a part of it, the stuff that eats your collagen, that can also be an issue. But you brought it back. So something happened, but it does happen that you can regrow it. And the idea that you can't is that it's hard to regrow it without the right environment around it. But I would love to see more professional athletes doing preventative maintenance in the joints, you know, eating more collagen. The other thing is, I'm assuming you're both eating collagen now.
Oh, yeah.
For joint production.
Oh, yeah. All day.
It takes 7 years to replace half the collagen in your body with new collagen. Like the rate of replacement is very slow. So like, keep eating your collagen, do the stuff in your joints. I think you can easily get another 5 or 10 years of, you know, playing professional level sports. Nick Foles was just up here at Bulletproof Labs, you know, MVP from the Super Bowl. And he's also, you know, older than a lot of the guys, but he's, you know, hanging in there. But it seems like the guys who are practicing preventative maintenance are just extending it. Tom Brady does the same sort of thing. How long do you think it's feasible for you guys?
Well, the average lifespan for a tennis player used to be around 30. If you look at, you know, all the guys in the past, you know, Pete Sampras retired at 30. Agassi made it to like 34, 35, and he was ancient. No one could believe he made it that long. And he went out of the U.S. Open and he had really bad hips, had them both replaced. You know, if you do everything right and you take care of your body with the recovery, get your sleep, you don't go out, you don't drink, and you take the right supplements. I've been taking collagen now since I read your Bulletproof Diet book. I think maybe 3 or 4 years every day.
Oh, nice.
And wow. I think you can go in doubles until you're 45. I mean, the goal is to play the Olympics next year. We played our first one in Athens. And so that will be 42 there. And why not try for the next ones, I think, in LA. Mm. We'll be 46. You got to set these goals and really work every day to do it. It's being professional in every aspect of your life. And I'm trying just to dial in the health as best as I can, because when I'm done, I want to be able to play with my kids. I want to be able to, you know, walk down the street and not be in, you know, limping or needing metal in every joint. So that's my goal, is to retire healthy, but keep playing as long as we can.
I want to know what you guys do different in your training and recovery at 41 than you did at 31. So what have you learned in the last 10 years about how to manage your either one of those, recovery or training?
I've learned that you need to scale it back. You got to really devote time to the recovery. So we're doing more time recovering than we're on the court. So we used to hit, when we were in our younger 20s, we used to hit 3 or 4 hours. And now we're going out there really intensely for 45 minutes to an hour, getting it all in quickly. And then we're starting the recovery process. So I think we're scaling it back, and we feel a lot better, more energetic for practices and matches than being in the gym and the court for just way too long. And you don't, like, I track my HRV and all this. And if I go over 2 or 3 hours of exercise, I can see that drops dramatically the next day. So just trying to find the right balance. And we've hit 1 million balls. So short and quick on court. And then it's all about the recovery.
All right. Do you both sort of practice the same recovery techniques, technologies, or do you each have your own sort of path? You train together and then one's getting a massage, the other one's in a sauna or something like that.
Yeah, we both do it.
I think I probably do a little more simple. I mean, I do a lot of massage. I use the Normatec. I use the Theraguns. We have a Beamer. We each have a Beamer. So we'll do that in the morning and in the evening. And then you take it one step further, and he travels with a bag of stuff.
I bring an extra bag of supplements. I have have you heard of the ARP device? It's the, you know, it's electrical stimulation. So you can do, you know, fire your muscles in a short amount of time and build muscle that way.
Yeah, exactly. There's a, it uses a mixed waveform. I have a Russian prototype that uses that same waveform. A new stim makes one, and actually at Upgrade Labs, we've got a new one coming in with the same set of waveforms. So yeah, that's cool. So you actually travel from those. The right kind of electrical stimulation will cause muscle and even nerves as well as cartilage to regrow, which is cool. That was another technology besides ozone that grows cartilage. Okay, that's cool. That's pretty unusual. It's pretty expensive too.
Yeah, and then we'll always do ice bath. I mean, it's painful, and they always have them at the tournaments now. They don't have.
How long do you go in?
You know, we go like 10 to 15. I mean, they don't have cryotherapy at tournaments yet, so we'll try to find that if it's around the city. You know, I try to hang out with Novak Djokovic. He's super into that. He also brings a big 16-wheeler where he has his own hyperbaric chamber, his own cryotherapy, his own float tank. He's got everything in there, which is nice. So I'm trying to...
I think I need to interview him. I didn't realize that.
Oh, he brings a 16-wheeler. I'm trying to snuggle up next to him so I can hang out in his RV, you know, which is really cool.
No kidding. That's how to roll. Tony Robbins does a lot of that. I've spoken on Tony's stage a couple times. And he has like the stuff flown in. So there's like an inflatable cryo chamber and all that. I don't know. I'm not that big time myself. I just like take a cold shower when I'm on the road.
Yeah.
At home, man. I'm set up here.
Yeah. And then we're tracking. I have the Oura Ring. I see you're wearing it.
Okay.
I'm super into my sleep. I feel so much better when I get a good solid, you know, 6.5-7 hours when it's not fragmented and broken up. And I'm always worried about the temperature of the room and the light exposure. And I still haven't really cracked the code because of all of my good nights and my bad nights, but I think it's a lot of jet lag involved. And then just being in different, you know, houses or hotels and still trying to dial that in. Bob, you sleep like a baby every night.
I have, for some reason. I got 2 or 3 kids in my bed and I have like my real estate's like 6 square inches of bed that I work off of, but I feel decent in the morning. I don't know why. I'm a better sleeper than Mike for whatever reason. I can sleep through whatever. Yeah. Yeah, that's right.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's weird. Yeah, I don't really need to be dark in the room. Mike's taping curtains and making sure there's not one crack coming.
Yeah, I'm very sensitive. I think my nervous system's a little overactive, so you know, I get up to go to the bathroom a few times at night. Sometimes I have trouble getting back to sleep. You know, I always have supplement. You know, sometimes I eat a bar like in the middle of nights because my blood sugar, I feel like that might drop. And that's what's
interesting,
waking me up. Sometimes my adrenals are a little taxed and maybe the cortisol spiking or there's not enough. So I'm trying to figure that out. But I've had about 5 months of data on the Oura Ring, and I'm looking at it every day, and maybe it's in my head, but...
Yeah, it probably is.
I'm trying to figure
it out. I love this, because you guys are twins. This is fascinating.
Relax.
Yeah, I know. I get into it, and then, you know, I try to figure out if meditating, you know, I think that's really beneficial. The more I do, it still hasn't really affected my sleep that much. Then I ordered this mini CPAP device from China. It's like 15 bucks on Amazon, and it blows air through your nose.
For 15 bucks? Does it work? I haven't tried that.
And for 15 bucks, it goes out of battery, so I had to get 2. And my Oura Ring actually spat out some great data. Like, I only woke up once, had better REM sleep, I had better deep sleep, but still not like super optimal at like an hour of REM and an hour and 20 minutes of deep. I know you're around the 2 hours in both. But
on a good night, like I was just, you guys made me check right now. I did an hour and 31 of REM, an hour and 30 of deep in 6.5 hours last night. How'd you do?
Last night I had 57 minutes of REM and an hour of 10 of deep, but I was up for an hour and 20 minutes. So efficiency is not great. So I'm just twiddling my thumbs in the middle of the night. I mean, I could spend that time reading or doing something, but I'm just fighting for sleep. And I know how important it is because I play so much better and I can concentrate so much better on the court. I see the ball. But so I don't know. I'm going to have to come maybe do a sleep study one of these days.
Yeah.
Take the time. Check that out.
I want you to take your Oura Ring and give it to Bob just for a night or two. Yeah. And just, let's just like measure what he does. You can delete the data from those nights so he doesn't dirty up your data stream. And just see, like, does he actually sleep like a baby, or does he just think he sleeps like a baby and he's actually getting the worst sleep on the planet and just is made out of made out of titanium?
I want to see. I definitely want to see. I gave it to my girlfriend. I gave it to her mom, and they look good. I mean, they stayed down and deep for a long time, and they're getting the REM. I only get the REM from about 6 to 8 in the morning, which is, you know, most people I think are supposed to get it throughout the whole night, but I'm only getting those key REM hours from 6 to 8 when, you know, so if I wake up too early, I'll look at, I'll have 0 minutes of REM, and it's really tough to focus on that little amount.
Wow. All right. I got a couple of hacks for you.
Okay. Yeah.
All right. The reason my REM sleep is as high as it is, cause I was getting less REM than this. I get above an hour only if I use, there's a company called LifeCykel, LifeCykel. They're lion's mane dual extract. It's the only thing I've ever found that just pops my REM way up.
Okay.
And I just interviewed the guys. I think the interview went up this week as we're recording this. I went up on the show. And it's really interesting because I've tried a bunch of different stuff, but that's the thing that gave me more dreams than L-theanine or anything else. Maybe that'll work for you. Don't do it in the middle of Wimbledon. Wait till you're done and check it out. But
I'm already on Amazon ordering it right now.
All right. We can connect afterwards too. I got a couple more ideas for you. I want to know, when did you guys get to Wimbledon to manage your jet lag? Like as pro athletes, you know, you're going to have to get used to it. You want to be at the top of your game. Does it take you a week, 2 weeks? Like, how does that work?
Yeah, we've been in Wimbledon already for 2 weeks. We played a warm-up event, and now we're to settle it in, and we're practicing at Wimbledon every day. So we had a good 14 days to get adjusted to the jet lag. Bob's a lot of, I mean, he goes home a lot of times. He'll fly across the Atlantic to Florida to pick up his kids and then comes in, and you bounce back pretty strong. But for me, I like to get here a good 2 weeks just to have your best chance. This is the biggest tournament of the year. You want to feel good, come out of the gates hot and play well right from the beginning. So, yeah, we've been here for a while.
Yeah.
So now
flying back and forth, that's not, I wouldn't do that unless I had to. That's not recommended, but I have done that. No.
Okay, you don't do it recreationally, but all right, there's family stuff.
If I have to, I do it. Yeah, exactly.
Your family is important, right? Okay. All right. I can respect that. I was about to say, so Mike, you know, brotherly love, do you ever feel like just kind of tripping him when he's not looking just because, you know, he keeps, you know, not falling over from the things that would knock you out? I mean, do you get a little bit like, what the heck? This guy's like, you know.
He's extremely lucky. I mean, before every meal, I'm popping digestive enzymes, and he's, you know, I got my fish oils, I got my turmeric, I got all this stuff, and he's only taken a few supplements in his life. I could probably fill up a swimming pool of all the pills that I've taken.
Which one of you has a metal hip? I'm just saying.
That's right. I mean, that's
I use that against
Mike,
him.
Yeah,
day.
He uses that every day. It's like he got the last laugh. And I keep telling him, oh, sniper's coming for you, buddy. He's coming hard. I don't know about that.
Ouch.
I'm gonna defy you.
Yeah.
We'll see.
I remember I filmed this documentary called Moldy. And I interviewed a husband and wife couple, and the wife was having all these weird symptoms because their house had toxic mold in it. And they're both doctors, and he's like, I feel nothing, right? And finally, she said, I must have a problem in my head. But she said, but my temperature's a little bit high, so I guess it must be real. And went down this whole 2-year biopsying everything in the body to figure out what's going on. And they're like, oh, it's the mold in our house. The reason I'm bringing that up is he sat there, the husband who had no symptoms, and said, you know what? I finally realized this is real. Like, whatever's going on with her, it's not in her head. It's actually a biology thing. But it took him a long time before he was just kind of like, what the heck?
Yeah.
And now, this is a question for you, Bob. How much of this do you think is in Mike's head versus is just something different in his biology?
I mean, look, I definitely feel like we are built the same way, and I do feel the gluten-free and all that stuff has been really good for me. I was feeling some aches and pains around 32 years old. And I finally turned to Mike and I'm like, so what are you doing again? And so he got me on that. The reason why I was able to hold off 10 more years before I felt anything, that might have to do from when we were little babies. But who knows? You know, I think Mike's a good influence on me. He helps me with all the cutting edge supplements and all that. So I'm getting a dose of that from him. Is he a little bit crazy with it? I think maybe a little bit. You know, he loves it. He's a health nut and he researches it. He listens to all the podcasts and I don't have, unfortunately, I don't have time. I got the three kids. I'm running around changing diapers. Maybe if I didn't have the kids, who knows? But, so look, I just kind of, you know, I just kind of roll with it. He's always got a pocket full of pills. And you know, I ask him what he's taking. He tells me what he's taking and the reasons for it. And, you know, sometimes I jump on board, sometimes I don't, but I think as we're getting older and we want to prolong our career, I'm definitely going to have to start looking for those answers, you know, because, you know, at 41, this wasn't an age that people were supposed to play tennis. And especially we were on the courts since we were 2 years old. This doesn't make sense. You know, my hip finally blew out. Other stuff should blow out soon. So I think what he's learned is going to prolong that. But it's funny you brought up the mold. We stayed in a Airbnb in Rome a month ago. And I could kind of, when I walked into the Airbnb, I could almost smell or taste the mold. It was so damp in there. And so I stayed there for 2 days and I couldn't think. I was just a corpse.
Yeah, you were.
And Bob had no symptoms. He, you know,
didn't want to repack and move out. Like I was just too lazy to get out of there.
But maybe I was a little sleepy.
Mold also drives laziness. It'll make you just sit there and take it because you're like, I don't know, my willpower just went down because my mitochondria went down. So that can be part of it. Yeah. Okay, so what happened? Did you move out?
I had to move out and we had our trainer and physio and he had the same type of symptoms where he was tired all day. Couldn't focus, couldn't really even hold a conversation. I was just like in a fog and I'm like, yeah, I think we got to get out of here. I looked in the bathroom and I saw some like exposed pipes and I'm like, let's go, man. This hotel's on me. Let's roll. And yeah, it took about a day, 24 hours. And then I snapped out of it and my brain came back online. And but Bob, unbelievable, is just Iron Man.
Just a little bit tougher, mentally tougher.
There are people who have just less of an immune responsiveness to that stuff. It's not good for either, but it doesn't cause the inflammation like that. Did you look at your heart rate variability or your sleep quality those nights?
My sleep quality was horrendous. My heart rate variability was dropping like a rock. Everything was off. Everything, I was just struggling. Felt more inflamed. All the joints were inflamed. Yeah. So it's amazing. You can't see the mold, but it's getting in your body and just wreaking havoc.
I'm always a little worried about Airbnbs because a lot of the ones that are full-time Airbnb, they turn all the air conditioning off until someone's in there. And so it's just an opportunity for Mother Nature to do its work of breaking down wood when no one's there. So I've checked out of lots of places. I'm like, you know what? This place smells a little bit like a mop. I'm not sleeping here.
That's right. That's smart.
All right. I want to talk about music now. You guys play music together. You've actually played like with Counting Crows and done all sorts of cool stuff. You have your own EP, which is unusual. Do you think that what you do on the court is influenced because you play music together? I mean, musicians are working mm-hmm. together. I've seen people jamming before and my dad's a bluegrass guy and like there's some kind of a thing that happens in terms of brain synchronization between musicians. And they've looked at it under fMRI and with EEGs about, you know, what jazz improv people do. It's fascinating.
Yeah.
Do you think some of that helps your play?
I think definitely. We've spent more time in this music room. We used to live together for 15 years and we had a music room. We'd practice for a couple hours. And then we'd probably spend about 6 to 8 in the music room just jamming. Bob's a keyboard player. I'm a guitar player. And we'd just be in sync. We'd be locked in. We'd know
when a guy's going to solo, when to slow it down, build the dynamics, bring it down. So we were just kind of, you know, in the same pocket. And I could tell when we went onto the court, we carried that flow and played better doubles. And
wow.
And then, you know, then we, you know, I got married, we moved apart. He actually moved to a separate coast. Uh-huh. And we used to have all that time together and in the music room on the court. And then during the off season, we'd spend time apart. We'd show up at Australia and we'd be a little bit off sync. We used to win the Aussie Open almost every year, but then we went in there and we struggled. And I think it's just being just, I don't know, just sharing that groove. You know, it's like you're just locked in with another person. Your heartbeats are probably beating the same, you know, and then you carry it on the court. But then we lost that for a while. And so now we bring the instruments on the road with us and we make sure we're jamming in hotel rooms. And we really feel that it helps our tennis. It's amazing. Yeah.
Sure. Is there a particular song that you guys like to play together before you go out and dominate on the courts?
We're big Dave Matthews guys. We've seen Dave Matthews like, you know, probably 30 times in concert, and he likes to do extended jams, and some of our songs last about 30 minutes, it's just a great outlet to the stress of tennis and always being on court, working your body, and then you can come and you can really just chill out, go off to a different universe, and the getting creativity going, it's like just really balances out the other part of the brain. So we still just love it. We didn't have TV in our house growing up, so my dad put all the instruments in the living room. We'd come back, eat dinner, and then he'd teach us all these oldies. And then we went off to college and we learned music theory and learned how to play together. And still doing it just every day. Yeah, we have a guitar right here next to me.
All right. That is super cool. So that's a way to synchronize. Have you taught other doubles players, or do you know of other doubles players who are using music to help their teamwork on the court?
No. Luckily, most of these guys don't know how to play a lick of music. You go back in the day and everyone played, like Johnny Mag, Yannick, you know, all these guys are great musicians, Pat Cash. And I think we're the only guys, along with a couple guys from France or whatever, that play. And
I think maybe technology is killing that. Just the phones and the social media, it's killing so many hours in the day that it's being lost, I feel, a little bit. I feel like hobbies are being squashed by, you know, the 4 or 5, 6 hours of screen time each day. Because it's very weird to hear that no one plays music.
It's true. Man, I didn't think about that, but the number of people's low. So with your kids, are they getting screen time?
Yeah, they're getting a touch just to give my wife and I a little break. Our nanny did not travel on this trip, so we're both scrambling. Wimbledon has a great crash, so they spent a few hours there while I'm practicing. My wife is super mom. She takes them to the parks and does the tennis, and we got music
That's
going.
Hardcore.
It's hard. It's hard. It's really physical.
To have your kids, it was Wimbledon, like you need to be on, and to have your kids there and your whole family without help. Okay, we might both sound like spoiled fathers, something like that, but when I go to the Bulletproof Conference, I'm on stage like all day, every day, and just it's high pressure. And I love having my kids there. I wouldn't travel without them, but if we didn't have some help, I think my head would explode. So yeah, you're there. You guys crazy. Are managing on your own.
Yeah, my head does explode. You know, just the battle from getting them from the house to the car, the socks, the shoes. I mean, no, the tallying them off in the shower. It's wild sometimes. So I think maybe the day before the tournament, I'll probably tell my wife, you know, look, this is on you. I'm checking out for a little while. Get my headset. But yeah, it's physical. You know, how do you have kids?
Yeah, I've got an older girl, younger boy. They're 12 and 9 now.
Okay.
And yours are how old?
7, 5, and 3.
So okay. So you're right at that age where, you know, they ask you the same thing 20 times and you're trying to just focus on one thing and you're like, I'm not going to focus today if the kids are
around. Yeah, that's right. But my wife, she wants to do a homeschool thing for a year while, you know, we keep playing. And so it looks like this road show is going to keep going for a while. They're all coming.
Yeah, it'll from what I can tell, they settle into it. I've interviewed a few people who are doing that with their kids and having a great time. We're thinking about doing the same thing. Yeah. Well, let's talk about kids a little bit more. You guys, 16 years ago, started the Bryan Brothers Foundation to help kids.
Yeah.
At the very beginning, before you were as big of a deal in tennis as you are now. So what drove you to start your foundation and to focus it on at-risk youth?
Well, Andre Agassi was our idol. We loved him, posterized our room. He's one of the reasons we're playing today. He was a god to us. So we idolized
him. He's a great guy, too.
Yeah, great guy.
I'm assuming you guys have interacted with him and all that stuff.
Yeah, we idolized him growing up, you know, as little kids, as teenagers. Got his autograph when we were 10 years old. Then his career spanned such a long time. I played singles against him. Mike played singles against him at the U.S. Open. We played doubles against him. He was our Davis Cup teammate, and kind of mentored us. And he has that amazing foundation in Vegas where they do schools. Yeah. And so, you know, he's talked to us about it. We thought, wow, he's making such an impact. Maybe we can do one millionth of what he's doing. So we started our foundation. He helped us launch it. He came to our first event. You know, it sold out. He helped us raise a bunch of money, and then we were off to the races. But we have a group of kids called Team Bryan. It's mentoring, it's after school programs. It's kids that are from tough situations, just giving them a chance. And then 95% of these kids go on to get college scholarships, and we use tennis, you know, we give them tennis lessons, but, and these are schools like Stanford, Harvard. So they're going on to become, like leaders in the community. So we have really great teachers that are helping him. Ryan Wolfington's one of our buddies. He's in an amazing job. And now we do a couple events a year. We've teamed up with Jack Nicklaus, and we do a tennis and golf event in Palm Beach, Florida. And we get some of our friends like Serena or Andy Murray to come play tennis with people that are willing to pay, you know, a hefty sum. And then the next day, golf with, you know, Ricky Fowler, Jack, Dustin Johnson. So we have a hell of a time, and we raise a ton of money. But it's been a real good, you know, feel good project. And we'll probably do more of it when we retire, get more involved.
Got it. What's the core motivation? They say it sort of feels good. I mean, what's when you wake up in the morning, like, all right, I could play music, I could be with my kids, I could go practice, I could go recover,
yeah,
like, or I could, you know, help kids. You know, or do these charitable activities. Like, what's going on for you mentally, emotionally, spiritually when you think about philanthropy and how you fit it in your life?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, kids are innocent. You know, I see it. My kids are, you know, bright-eyed, and, you know, they're lucky they come from a great situation. I think kids, they have no control over, you know, their parents or where they live or how much money they have. And it's nice if we can change their situation for the better, give them some place to go after school if they're struggling, or if they're on the street. And, you know, we use tennis and mentoring to just kind of change the path of their life. And I think, you know, the education part of it is what really makes a difference. It empowers them to go on after the program to you know, do great things. So. Yeah, there's been a couple of situations with the kids. They're, you know, they've wanted to commit suicide, and, you know, just us being able to talk to them and give them, you know, just some hope it's been really special for us.
So you're left-handed, which means you're right-brained. All right. So that was the Bob answer.
Yeah.
All right. Is it the same for both of you?
Yeah. I mean, we do everything together. As
do you think
said,
of it the same way, though?
Yeah, it's rewarding. Just trying to get out of your daily routine and think about other people is, you know, a good thing. And these kids are so innocent, and to be able to impact their lives and help them achieve their dreams is it just feels awesome. And it's something that Andre has dedicated his whole life to now. Once he retired his kids, and he does events all the time. And he's one of the happiest guys I know.
He was just on at Wimbledon. He's always smiling and beaming. And, you know, I feel great when I get out of my own world and my supplements and my sleep and I'm, you know, do things for other people. So it actually gives back to you too. But we're really grateful that we can, you know, help kids.
Yeah, it does feel good. I do various things like that. Lately, it's been schools for girls in Africa. And you know, like you see what happens. In 2018, we funded 4 villages, a school in each village. And it's like, you look at the difference in quality of life and yeah, like there's something that feels good for you and you know, you're making the world a better place, but also you're like, wow, like, all right. Like, I don't know. It makes your heart feel good. So yeah. I'm with you there. And it feels like sometimes people don't talk about, you know, philanthropy. It's a little bit of a selfish activity because it does, like it opens your heart, right?
Yeah.
You want to open your heart. So yeah. It's all good. Everybody wins in that scenario.
That's true.
Okay. Now I have another question and I think I'm going to have to ask each of you this separately. And since I know, Bob, you listened to the show, you probably have already forecast this, but this has to do with Superhuman, my new book that comes out in October, my anti-aging book. This whole Dave, you're going to live to 180. Okay. All right. Let's start. Mike, what do you think? How long are you going to live?
I'm on every supplement possible. And I feel like I'm doing a lot right. I felt like I came into the world behind the eight ball a little bit, but it feels like I'm kind of reversing the tables and my body's feeling better year after year. I mean, I know you're going for 180. I think I'm going to be right behind you. I don't want to say I'm going to go.
Give me a number.
You want a number? I would say a $179.
Jeez. Man, your skin's gonna look weird.
No, but there's gonna be new technologies. I'll be facelift, stem cells, whatever there is. But you know, I want to feel good. I want to be happy. It would be really cool just to accumulate more and more knowledge and be able to share with, you know, other people. That's the cool thing about being wiser and older. You know, we're helping kids now and trying to give them our perspective. But if you can live that long, I mean, we're gonna have a lot of stuff floating around.
You're
our
gonna
brains.
Be really good at guitar.
Yeah, that's for sure.
And imagine what your charity could do over the course of another 100 years of being led that way. Like, yeah, all right, I love it. It's 179. You're getting up there.
I'll take 92. You know, look, I want to live as long as I can. I want to help my kids. Obviously, I want to see them grow. I want to see my grandkids. I want to see them, you know, maybe play tennis or do sports and be successful, whatever they do. So I want to be around as long as I can. You know, I don't think anyone's looking forward to dying. So I'll jump on the supplement train with Mike a little bit.
No more antibiotics.
Yeah, that's right. Weird. I have to take antibiotics now when I go to the dentist with my new.
Oh, because of
the metal in my body. So that's maybe going to hurt my cause. But
you know, you could just do intravenous ozone, which would pretty much do the same thing. If it was me and I was just taking antibiotics prophylactically, like let's disrupt your microbiome, which we know is destructive, in case you might get a really bad infection. It turns out systemic ozone is pretty strongly antimicrobial. By the way, wow. I'm sure most doctors listening to this are like, Dave, you're a jerk. You don't know what the hell you're talking about. Listen to the interview with Dr. Schallenberger. I didn't make this up.
Like, or I
this
can
is coming
just
from alternative medicine.
Brush my teeth really hard and not go to the dentist.
There you go. Just rinse with some hydrogen peroxide. Yeah. You'll be fine. Walk it off.
So, yeah, I mean, look, I want to go for a while. So I'm with you guys.
For a while, all right, but at least 92, but more if you can do it and you're comfortable.
Yeah. I want to be with my family as long as I can, so I'll be doing everything I can to get the most years.
You got to get that book. When's that book coming out? October, right?
It's October 5th or 8th or something like that. But it's on Amazon now. But I'll
hook me up.
I'll get you an early copy.
Thank you.
I know a guy.
Awesome.
It's called Superhuman. Yeah, awesome. It's a good one. And there's some stuff. I mean, you already know this, Mike. And there's some stuff you should start now. A lot of it's just like don't take the hits. And since you guys travel a lot, which is not good, so do I. And you've been working out for a very long time at a very high level. So there's some systems that get enhanced by that and some that get worn down. So like, what are the ones that have been worn down? How do you enhance those? And the ones that you made stronger, those are going to serve you. So it's all just about, you know, take less hits and recover better. And when you're 80, you'll be looking around going, man, we're kicking all of our friends' asses. And I like nothing it. Wrong with that.
This is going to be a great case study.
Yeah, it will be because you're twins, right? You know, we'll see. What's your skin look like when you're both 80? Yeah. I can tell you the one with the most supplements might have better looking skin. I'm just saying.
Well, thanks for all your knowledge and your books and your supplements and everything. Because 3 or 4 years ago, my cytokine levels were high. My inflammation was high. Changed my diet, added more fats. I'm actually doing the Bulletproof Coffee on court, which looks a little weird. Wow. But it definitely helps with focus and helps sustain for long matches. And so, I feel like I'm on the cutting edge. A lot of these players are behind me, but eventually everyone's going to catch up. So they're all going to be bulletproof, but it's nice to be ahead of the pack.
Oh, thanks for letting me know that. That's so cool. It makes me genuinely just happy when I learn that someone just at the very top of their game, is using, you know, some of the stuff I figured out. So just genuine thanks for that. And guys, I know you've got to get some rest, get some sleep, get some family time, get some really good nutrition because you are hitting the courts in 2 days at Wimbledon. Thank you for being on Bulletproof Radio. Thanks for taking the time. And I just appreciate your level of excellence and just God, 20 years of just continuously kicking ass. It's really impressive.
Thanks, Dave. Appreciate it, Dave. It's on.
The Human Upgrade, formerly Bulletproof Radio, was created and is hosted by Dave Asprey. The information contained in this podcast is provided for informational purposes only and is not intended for the purposes of diagnosing, treating, curing, or preventing any disease. Before using any products referenced on the podcast, consult with your healthcare provider, carefully read all labels, and heed all directions and cautions that accompany the products. Information found or received through the podcast should not be used in place of a consultation or advice from a healthcare provider. If you suspect you have a medical problem or should you have any healthcare questions, please promptly call or see your healthcare provider. This podcast, including Dave Asprey and the producers, disclaim responsibility for any possible adverse effects from the use of information contained herein. Opinions of guests are their own, and this podcast does not endorse or accept responsibility for statements made by guests. This podcast does not make any representations or warranties about guest qualifications or credibility. This podcast may contain paid endorsements and advertisements for products or services. Individuals on this podcast may have a direct or indirect financial interest in products or services referred to herein. This podcast is owned by Bulletproof Media.